The Buddha wasn't the sort of person who would go out and pick fights with other people. Start a debate. In general, there were three cases when he did go out. He'd heard that people were teaching things that were really detrimental to the practice, that would get in the way of putting an end to suffering. He sought them out and he asked them, "Do you really teach this?" When they said they did, they would point out the obstacles they were creating. One of the cases was someone who said that everything you experience in the present moment is the result of past actions. It's odd that this belief is actually attributed to the Buddha himself, but it's not what he taught. What you do right now has an impact right now. Past actions do have an influence. They provide the raw material from which you construct your experience of the present moment. But it's your present action and your freedom to choose in the present. That's what allows for there to be an end of suffering, because you can choose to act in ways that lead to suffering, or you can see that they are leading to suffering and you can change your ways. And you get results right away. You have that freedom of choice. That's something that's not determined by the past. Something that comes from your ability to sense things right in the present moment. When we're talking about the luminosity of the mind, that's what the Buddha means, I think. The mind's ability to observe itself and then to learn from its actions. Another view that the Buddha would argue with is the idea that whatever you experience in the present moment is totally random, has no real cause. Everything just happens spontaneously. If that were the case, there'd be no way that you could develop a skill to see any pattern for figuring out what actions would lead to suffering and what actions would not lead to suffering. Because suffering and not suffering were spontaneous. There'd be no path of practice. The third view that he argued with was that there was a creator God who determined your experience of pleasure or pain. Again, he said, if that were the case, then everything would be placed on the Creator God. There would be nothing you could do about it. So those are views that the Buddha said were totally antithetical to the path, because the path is premised on the fact that you do have freedom of choice in the present moment. We observe yourself, you're sitting here meditating, and you can see that you're breathing in certain ways, or you're focusing on the breath in certain ways, or thinking about things in certain ways that lead to suffering, that lead to stress. And you realize you don't have to do that. You have that freedom of choice not to do that. That's what insight is all about, catching yourself doing something that's adding to stress right here in the present moment, and realizing it's better not to do that, because you're not weighing yourself down if you don't do that, and you have that freedom not to do that. And we follow that as you try to get the mind to settle down. We follow that question: what am I doing right now that can lead the mind to settle down? And once it's settled down, am I doing anything that's unnecessary, that adds unnecessary stress to the moment? And you watch yourself. You watch your stillness of mind. And if you see if there's any disturbance, you ask yourself, what did I just do? Or it seems that the level of stress goes down. You ask yourself, well, what did I just do? What did I let go of just now? And you follow that lead. The Buddha talks about this in lots of different suttas. There's the sutta on emptiness, where you look at your mind and you realize that as you're sitting here, you don't have the responsibilities of being at home. You don't have the responsibilities of being out in the world. You don't have those disturbances. You're here in wilderness. This wilderness is empty of those disturbances. So appreciate that fact. And then ask yourself, well, is there some disturbance that's still there? If you're sitting out in the forest, the Buddha said, there are the disturbances of wilderness, after all. Wilderness is a dangerous place. The romantic idea that it's a wonderful place where you can go and commune with God or something, they didn't have that back in those days. Wilderness was a scary place. There were lots of diseases, lots of dangerous animals. The Buddha talks about the dangers of being a monk out in the forest and include the fact that there are criminals living in the forest. That's where they tended to hide out. They may not like the idea that there's a monk hanging around. And John Lee tells a couple of stories where hunters really don't like the fact that monks are in the forest. These monks, of course, are spreading goodwill to all the animals, which means the animals are protected. They'd be more likely to escape from the traps, escape from being shot. So there are cases where hunters actually try to drive the monks away. More recently, there were cases in Thailand where members of the Forestry Bureau were trying to cut down forests, but monks were living there. And so they would threaten them with guns. So the wilderness is not necessarily a comfortable place to be. And there's some disturbance in your mind as you think, here I am in the wilderness, exposed to dangers. The Buddha says, well, drop that perception. Hold on to the perception of earth. You could perceive the perception of breath. Think of the breath energy spreading everywhere. Think of the fact that everything all around you is earth. Just earth. You don't have to think of it being trees or rocks or whatever, just the earth property. And that perception has a lot less of disturbance than the perception of wilderness. From there he would have you go into perceiving successively more subtle perceptions, space, consciousness, nothingness. Each is empty of disturbance, more empty of disturbance than the preceding one. You follow that and you finally get the mind to where it sees that its greed, aversion, and delusion are the problem. They're disturbing you. You let go of those. Then you stop your fabrication of the present moment. And as you stop that fabrication, something opens up inside. Total freedom, totally unrestricted. So that's the direction we're going, a direction of less and less disturbance, based on the realization that the disturbances that are bothering your mind are actually coming from your mind itself. And if you weren't playing a role in constructing the present moment, the fact that you stopped the fabrication in the present moment wouldn't have any impact. But the fact is that your fabrication, your intentions in the present moment are a necessary part of your experiencing the six senses. That's why the Buddha was able to teach people and have them gain awakening while they were listening to his talk, because they would progressively let go of this, let go of that, what they were doing in the present moment, and things would open up inside. So this is why the practice is one of what you're doing and getting sensitive to what you're doing and getting more skillful in what you do. The fact that you're suffering is not caused by anybody else. It's caused by your own lack of skill. This is why each of us has to practice. When the Buddha first approached the five brethren to give that talk that we chanted just now, before he gave the talk, he had to convince them that it was worth listening to him, because they had been his attendants when he was undergoing austerities. When he gave up on the austerities, they got discouraged. They lost their faith in him. So he had to restore that faith. But the first thing he told them is, the deathless has been attained, and if you do as I tell you, you can attain it too. He didn't say, I'll do it for you, or that it's going to happen naturally on its own, or that some outside power is going to come and do it for you. You've got to do it. At first they resisted, but they asked him, have I ever made a claim like this before? They realized that he was a very truthful person. So that realization is what opened their minds, willing to be willing to listen, and being willing to listen, they started taking apart their own experience as they were listening and seeing how it applied to what they were doing in the present moment. That's how Gondanya became the first disciple, noble disciple, because he stopped doing something he'd been doing in the present moment. So one, nobody else can do this for you because you're the one who's doing this, causing the suffering. But you have the choice, you have the freedom not to do that. There are influences coming in from the past, but you do have freedom of choice in the present moment as to what you do with those influences. And that's what makes all the difference. So this is why we sit here meditating, looking at our breath. This breath is part of the way we fabricate the present moment. We talk to ourselves about the breath, because talking to ourselves is the way another part of how we fabricate the present moment. We're going to be holding perceptions and feelings in mind, labels for how the breath goes in the body, how we are related to the breath. Where are you in relationship to your breath right now? Are you above it? Are you behind it? Are you surrounded by it? Which of those perceptions is most useful? I found that one of being surrounded by the breath, being bathed by the breath, helps to center the mind. So you can try that. But the perceptions are an important part of how you put everything together in the present moment. So everything you're doing right here, right now, as you meditate, is meant to get you sensitive to what you're doing in general. Because it's not that you breathe only while you're meditating, or you talk to yourself only while you're meditating, or that you deal with perceptions and feelings only while you're meditating. You're doing these things all the time. It's simply a matter of learning how to do that with knowledge. That's what makes the difference. If you do it in ignorance, you're going to suffer. If you do it with knowledge, it's part of the path. So this is why there's nothing that anybody else can do for you. They can give you advice. They can give you a good example. But it's up to you to actually decide to follow the example, to follow the advice, and to see how it applies to your particular case, and use your own discernment in applying it. So it's in this way that each person for him or herself, even though the Buddha said that the whole of the holy life is admirable friendship. Admirable friendship doesn't mean the Buddha's going to do this for us, because he can't. But he can show us the way. If we hadn't been shown the way, who knows where we'd be right now. So without him, we wouldn't be here, which is why admirable friendship is a necessary part of the path. But it's not sufficient. We've got to add ourselves, add our own powers of observation, our own determination that we don't want to suffer. So we have to cultivate the desire. As the Buddha said, that's one of the first bases for success. A desire that's properly focused, not too strong, not too weak, focused on the causes. Notice, realizing, of course, that the results are there in the desire. You really want the results, but you realize that to get the results, you've got to focus your desire on doing this right. So it's up to you. There are those cases in the canon where the Buddha gives a Dhamma talk And some people follow along. They apply what's called appropriate attention. They take what they learn from the talk and they apply it to, what am I doing right now that's causing stress? What am I doing that I don't have to do that's causing stress? And they gain different levels of awakening. Other people listening to the same talk don't get awakening at all because they're not doing the work. So the Buddha said, as he said, he points out the way. It's up to us to follow the instructions and to use our own ingenuity, use our own powers of observation in seeing how those instructions apply to our particular case right here, right now, to determine what we're going to do right here, right now. This is why we sit here focused on the present moment, not because it's a wonderful moment, but it's the moment where everything is being put together. Processes that cause suffering are acting out right here, right now. But you can convert them through knowledge to the path. Use the path to let go of whatever's unnecessarily causing suffering, and then you let go of the path too. But not until it's done its work. In the meantime, you hold on, as the Buddha said in that analogy of the raft. You put together the raft from the twigs and branches on this side of the river, and you put the raft in the river, and then you make an effort with your hands and your feet as you swim across the things you have to do. It's only at the very last moments of the path where you don't do anything at all. But in the meantime, learn to be skillful in observing your own actions right here, right now. The more clearly you see what you're doing, the more clearly you're going to see exactly where your actions are creating unnecessary stress and suffering right now. It's only when you see that that you can do something about it. It's all up to you. The Buddha established the Dhamma and Vinaya. As he left it behind, he said, this will be your teacher in my absence. So the Buddha's played his part. Now it's up to you to play yours.